It's no surprise that with the changes in EEOC leadership and the roles and the vacancies that we see sort of a direct impact in terms of the numbers in fiscal year 2019 that have come out from the EEOC. And as we all know, the fiscal year runs from October 1st through September 30th. And in looking at the charge statistics for fiscal year 2019, the commission reports 72,675 charges. And you can see very clearly from the graph that this represents a decrease, a 4.9% decrease specifically when compared to fiscal year 2018 charges. So we do continue to see a downward trend in terms of the number of charges that are filed. In terms of the types of claims that are filed within the charges, retaliation consistently and continues to be the highest percentage of the total charges filed at 58%. But obviously, this percentage is based on the combined total retaliation claims based on any type of protected status. In second is disability, which had the second highest number of charges. And that, again, is a trend that has continued with disability claims being high in terms of number. Off to the side, you'll see the LGBT, Equal Pay Act, and GINA charges, which are just a fraction of the overall number of charges that were filed in fiscal year 2019. On the litigation front, after the charges are filed and the litigation that the EEOC chooses to take up, we see in fiscal year 2019, the last row of this slide, 144 merits lawsuits were filed. Again, not as many. 100 of those, when you look at the second column of this chart, were filed by individuals in terms of the underlying charge. 44 multiple victim lawsuits, which involve 27 non-systemic class cases. That's typically fewer than 20 individuals involved. And then 17 systemic students. So we do see a decline from the trend over the past couple of years, even though, you know, the EEOC in particular still says we have enforcement priorities to bring systemic lawsuits, the numbers have decreased. Looking across the 144 merits-based lawsuits that were filed, 129 of those fall into implications of Title VII, of course, race, sex, religion, and national origin discrimination. 53 of the 144 alleged discrimination under the ADA, which is 37% of all of the lawsuits filed. And so again, we see just a breakdown in terms of the lawsuits, which is much lower than in years past. One case that may be of interest is the highest ticket settlement that the EEOC was able to achieve. It was a case out of Denver. 21 complainants were involved in that case. And if you'd like to take a look at the EEOC press release, it's from January 9th of this year. And the payout by the company in that case, Jackson National Life Insurance, was a whopping $20.5 million. A very interesting case in terms of the settlement amount on that one. And the claims involved race, national origin, and sex discrimination, as well as retaliation. Other noteworthy developments from the EEOC. One, they brought transparency to how the commissioners are acting, the ability to search how the commissioners voted. And so there's more transparency around that process. In terms of EEO1 and compensation data, you may recall that the most significant development from the EEOC, arguably in fiscal year 2019, was their focus on the collection of EEO1 data, including compensation and hours worked. Again, sort of part of their initiative from a pay equity standpoint to have a better understanding of how pay disparities, if any, existed across employers. And the most recent update to that is the EEOC is now saying that they would like to pass on compiling that data. So the March 30th deadline to provide that data has come and gone with sort of no further development. So it's still up in the air at this point as to the requirements and how that process is going to work. The EEOC has also indicated that a proposed rule is coming on joint employer status, jumping on the bandwagon like the DOL and NLRB, and coming forward with an articulated sort of framework for how to determine joint employer status. And then there was also guidance from the EEOC and FAQs on how to report non-binary individuals. Not that you have to ask that question, but if someone comes forward and identifies as non-binary, how do you account for that from an EEO1 reporting perspective? So the EEOC issued guidance on that, as well as we anticipate a proposed rule on wellness plans and when the EEOC will be able to penalize or reward employees to come forward and disclose medical information in health risk assessments.